Blog Talk Radio.
I was struggling to survive.
All right. Hello there, everyone out there in Blog Talk Radio land. Oh, it is another glorious Wednesday, despite the coldness that we're having here in the ATL. Yes, I'm having vocal problems and things. Just a little bit, honey. I've been under the weather. I caught this old nasty little cold from a coworker, but it's still another glorious Wednesday. And you know what time it is, honey, so get your cufflinks and stuff together because, baby, it is time to dish tea. And you are dishing tea, darlings, with Big Meat. So hello to all of my tea sippers out there. Thank you so much for your love and support. If you're tuning in right now and need to listen, want to chime in on everything, honey, please chime in at 347 347-205-9183. That's 347-205-9183. And we'll be able to get you in on the conversation, questions, comments, or concerns, honey, as long as they're constructive and not, you know, evil and shady and all of that, honey, because we do everything here. You know, everything here is done with reasonable sophistication and things. I am in the middle of doing 5,000 things at the same time. Everybody's blowing up my cell phone and things trying to get in on the show. And I thank you all for your love and support for that. But not when I'm on the air, sugar, because you know my attention span gets all that way. However, I'm back. If you are on the computer and you're listening right now, honey, the tea room is open. You go right over there, honey, have your questions and comments and stuff over there. I invite you to go and chat responsibly, please, because remember, this is the written word, and sometimes we tend to, you know, interpret what someone else may be saying, you know, in our own little ways and things, and want to believe that they probably have gotten upset with us and all of that. So don't go throwing your computers into walls or out of windows and things, honey. Just dish your tea over there responsibly, okay? Now, here is my disclaimer for the show. This show is for mature audiences, and the language and subject matters are not appropriate for children or anyone who is not mature to handle the subject matter. So your listening discretion is advised. Again, your listening discretion is advised, okay? Now, listen, honey. I got to let you know that I have a new website coming up. It's in development right now, but dishingtea is now a .com, honey. So pretty soon, you'll be able to take all of that over to www.dishingtea.com, honey. But the email is up and running, so if you need to email me with any questions, comments, or concerns, show ideas, sponsorship information, and things of that nature, you could email me directly at bigmeach@dishingtea.com. Again, that's bigmeach@dishingtea.com. I am loving that. Oh, I'm not sounding like myself. I got this little breathiness going on that I adore so much in female performers, but it doesn't sound all that sexy right now on me. Yes. But we're going to continue on anyway, honey. I want to thank you to all of my sponsors very quickly, honey, because without you, there is no me. Thank you for all of your love and your support. Trade Day Management and PR Firm at Trade Day. Enjoy a touch of Southern hospitality with a universal appeal for all of your public relations and entertainment management needs. Contact Travion Davenport at 678-523-3088, 678-523-3088, or email at tradeaypr@gmail.com, tradeay, TREADAYPR, @gmail.com. Pharaoh's Treasure Box, fine art, unique jewelry, and sensational 3D silk floral arrangements, creations by Taps. For all of your decorative needs, contact Pharaoh's Treasure Box at 248-688-5178 or 5179. That's 248-688-5178 or 5179. Or email at pharaohstreasurebox@yahoo.com. That's pharaohstreasurebox@yahoo.com. Parisian Wine Productions, music to lighten your spirits and lift your soul, specializing in gospel, house, and inspirational dance music production. For all of your church or Christian entertainment social needs, contact Paris Harrison, he's the CEO, at 646-243-9396. That's 646-243-9396. Or email at paris42268@yahoo.com. That's paris42268@yahoo.com. Life Fellowship of Christ Ministries. Live in freedom everywhere. LIFE. Reverend James Coleman is the leader and founder of the Ecumenical Social Justice Ministries, brought forth to free the oppressed and introducing a fresh approach to the Christ consciousness. Contact Reverend Coleman at 313-833-9278. 833-9278, or email at mustardcole@yahoo.com. Mustardcole@yahoo.com. Each of Vidal Couture. Enjoy high fashion with a luxurious twist. Step into the future with fresh, innovative couture. Designs by Miss Michi DeVille. For more information, contact Michi at 313-996-9807, 313-996-9807, or you can Facebook Michi at facebook.com/MichiDeVille, MichiDeVille, Michi DeVille. Big Brothers Network, the BBN, a new online web magazine designed to show the world the class and style of the debonair man of size and his admirers. The first edition was launched Memorial Day weekend. For the newest edition or for more information, go to www.bigbrothersnetwork.com, www.bigbrothasnetwork.com. Oh, yes, the CBCA, honey. The Caribbean Voice Enterprises. We cater, promote, entertain, and provide special services with the Caribbean swagger. Island flavor on the mainland. Bam, bam. Mr. Silvano T. DeMarco is the CEO and founder of the CABC. For more information, please contact Silvano at CaribbeanVoiceATL@yahoo.com. Caribbean Voice with the Z, ATL. At yahoo.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/SilvanoTDeMarco. That's Silvano T. DeMarco, SilvanoTDMarco. Kissing After Dark, Atlanta's premier social events for those who are tired of the same old party scene. These premier events are across the ATL where the grown and sexy can become the seasoned and sophisticated. Every Wednesday at the Banana Wind, right in the underground Atlanta, join Kissing After Dark for Lesbian Wednesdays, the hottest lesbian bi-attractional, bi-curious party in the ATL. Doors open at 8 p.m. and go until there's no cover. $3 drink specials and $10 bucket specials. For more information, go to Facebook.com, Kissing After Dark. It's Facebook.com/KISSN After Dark. Swirl Films, the number one urban film production company, specializing in all areas of film production, including directing, producing, script writing, budgeting and scheduling, production assembling, and post-production. For more information, contact Eric Thomasunas, Russ Parr, or Keith Neal at 910-798-2934, 910-798-2934, or email at info@swirlfilms.com, info@swirlfilms.com. All right. Got a couple of special announcements coming later at the end of the show. We have Pharaoh's Treasure Box with the Save the Date, and we also have the Big Brothers Network with the Save the Date as well. I'll get to that at the end of the show. However, without any further ado, we're going to bring in this gentleman, honey. This has been a work in progress, honey, for 365 days. We've been back and forth, and we've been able to lock him down. Finally, we're going to explain that on the air because we had an internalized joke and this, that, and the third, but we'll get it on when he comes in. But many of you know him for his rich tones, his wonderful vocals. And ladies and all of my gay sisters out there, honey, we know him from just being fine. I call him Mr. Fine-Ass Motherfucker of R&B. He sits up there and lets us have it, and he's on his way to let us have it again as he's in production with the new project. And he's going to tell us a few more things about him. You know him from New Jack City, honey, as the pretty boy. I was about to quote the line, but I was about to fuck it up. So without any further ado, let me just bring him on here. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the one and the only Mr. Christopher Williams. Hey there, darling. How are you? Thank you for coming on in.
I'm good. How you doing, me?
Hey, baby. I am everything, and everything is me. I'm sitting up here going through vocal changes because of this damn cold. One minute I'm sounding like myself, the next minute I'm sounding like Attila the Hun, and then again I'm sounding like, you know, a fake Barry White or something. But anyway, that there is what I'm going through. Now, like I was telling the audience, let me explain this to folks because y'all have to understand this. When I met Chris face-to-face a few months ago, we were in North Carolina, and I walked over to him, and, you know, I'm 6'4", and I'm over 400 pounds, and I know that could be a little intimidating. And when I'm pissed, I know it's intimidating. So I walked over to him, and he looked at me, and I was like, hey, what's up? And he was like, hello. And I was like, oh, that's all you got to say to me? You know? And he was like, you know, he had this look on his face like, okay, who is this? You know? And I said, I'm Big Meech. He said, well, nice to meet you. I said, well, damn, you just going to stand me up and then act like you don't know me. And he said, stand you up. I said, yes, I've been sitting up there. I done had you booked on my show. You was a no-call, no-show. We have been talking up until 2 days prior to the show, and then you did a no-call, no-show, and I have not heard from you since, and now I see you. Well, it was at that point, Chris says, well, what do you mean we talked? I said, I've been talking to you on Facebook. He said, aha. You are the 10th person, the 10th person to tell me that I was supposed to have been somewhere, you know, and this, that, and the other. So, Chris, you put in your words, what's going on with the Facebook page so that folks understand that they're not talking to you on Facebook?
Yeah, we're going to come up with the new Facebook thing on with the website and everything, which will probably be launched like just during Christmas along the first week of January, where everything will connect Facebook. But the bottom line is, I guess somebody, I believe when we finally got around to getting to Facebook and calling them, the site is going to be shut down. But I guess somebody out of St. Louis, they found out the email was tracked to St. Louis. Somebody out of St. Louis was fraudulently, you know, it's not hard to just, like, track some pictures or whatever. And I had actually done a show with somebody he was working with in St. Louis. Because that was the thing that was confusing at first. Some people was like, well, you know, they had some, like, personal, like, photos or whatever from shows and stuff. And the guy was basically saying he was me. And he had gotten up to about four different pages. There was about 20,000 people, I guess, following. And unfortunately, you know, he misled a few people, but I guess he had a little fun. And I'm going to have a real official Christopher Williams Facebook and stuff, and I'm going to start tweeting and doing all this stuff. But I never really was into that until, you know, I realized, you know, that I needed one. And for two, it's a way to just, like, keep in touch with a network of people that want to keep in touch with your music and stuff, or keep in touch with whatever you're doing for whatever reason.
Dig that.
I'm going to break down and do it. And then you said I should do it. Kevin said I should do it. Everybody said I should do it.
Well, you know what? And see, here's the thing, because, yeah, it can – and a lot of folks don't want to do it or don't want to get involved with it because it can become addictive, and you can find yourself spending a lot of time on these computers and stuff. Tweeting, I haven't gotten to real big on tweeting because I don't have a BlackBerry and this, that, and the other. And those who got phones and the tweet is on the phone, see, they like all that kind of shit. That would bug me. Because you'll be in the middle of something, every 2 minutes this damn thing is going off. But this is the wonderful, wonderful opportunity to reach out to folks and to reconnect so that the folks know what's happening. But until you get the official Christopher Williams site and stuff running, we're going to be dishing that tea right here so that the fans will know exactly what's going on, what's to come, and this, that, and the third, so that we can understand that Christopher Williams ain't went nowhere, that you've still been doing your thing, and you've been doing it the way you have. Now, let's get started with taking us from, you know, we always got to do the background, and let's start at the beginning. When you were starting to hone in on your talents, I've read your bio, and which is lovely, by the way. You were right, okay? Keith wrote this. He worked the shit out this thing. Okay. So let's start there and let everyone, you know, get a little taste of your humble beginnings, you know, you starting off as a singer in the church and your grandmama naming you Christopher, meaning Christ, the Christ bearer, and things of that nature. So let's go there to those times of development.
Well, way back in the beginning, 43 years, I guess you could say, ago when I was born, and my grandfather, my mom, you know, I'm from the Bronx. My grandfather was co-pastoring in the church on Mount Zion in Harlem. So my beginnings really with music were really from really my grandmother, who had a real, she would always tell me, because a lot of times my grandmother didn't get involved in a lot of, even though my grandfather was a co-pastor, she didn't get involved in a lot of church stuff, because my grandmother was real outlandishly outspoken, and she just sometimes didn't function as well with people. So she always hummed gospel music around the house, and she would say that that's the way I worship. You know, I mean, she's just one of the people, you walk in my grandmother's house and she'd just be humming. Whether it was Jesus Keep Me There to Cross or Sweet Out Prayer, one of them old hymns that you find in the hymn book. My first experiences with singing was really trying to out-sing my grandmother and her assistant church, Sister Emmanuel, who Reverend Emmanuel was another reverend in the church. He was the main pastor, and my granddad was the co-pastor. But we were a small church family. And that was my real first experience. And my grandmother would always tell me, she told my uncles, which were her sons, you know, Chris can really sing, because they were all athletic, trying to make, you know, baseball, football player. And I played baseball really well, too. But in the beginning, it was about music. And then during the holidays, what we would do is I had three uncles and my sister. We would become the Jackson Five, and of course I'd be the Michael, or if we were the Temptations, I'd be Eddie or David Ruffin. I'd be Eddie or David Ruffin. So we put these little holiday performances on. That was really my first real experience and love for music. And when I really truly knew it was something I wanted to do, was really two occurrences when I was younger. My mom used to take me to Apollo, living in the Bronx. We weren't far from the Apollo, and she would always, my mother was a beautician, she was a beautician, and she would, you know, save up her money, take me and my sister to the Apollo time. So I would see, like, Michael Jackson, Howlin', and Blue Moon, people like that, and it really intrigued me. But then as a kid, I found out that I had a legendary jazz singer as an aunt. And I'd say around the time I was about 7 or 8 years old, I really started realizing, like, who she was, because I would see the Metal Records commercial and stuff, and then Ella Fitzgerald. I remember one time going, I guess I was about 8 or 9 years old, my mom and dad, we all got dressed up, grandparents, uncles, we went down to the U.S. Theater to see her, Count Basie, and Frank Sinatra. And I was sitting on Count Basie's lap, and Frank Sinatra was sitting at the piano next to us, and my aunt walked in, and, you know, of course, she's like, I hadn't seen you. She's like, oh, she was like, and I was like, and I remember vividly telling my mother and aunt when they walked in, I'm going to do this one day. Because it was the energy of being backstage. I had never been backstage. Like, Radio City pricked me, watching Michael Jackson, Teddy Pendergrass, Gladys Knight. It really did prick me. It made me like, but it never, I guess when I was able to touch it on that level and know that somebody in my family, I was like, I want to do this. But truthfully, we didn't lean, my father was a hardworking guy from General Motors. My mother's a beautician. And my dad, we were very private, and he didn't want anybody. It wasn't like we were going to go ask Ella to help us or help me. So I started pursuing music at that time, and I had various bands and stuff like that, but never really did anything to it until I got to the point where I graduated from high school, and that's when I really said I'm going to pursue doing it. And fortunately, by the time I was 20, 21 years old, I got my first record deal. And that was really the humble beginning. That was really the humble beginning from church and those experiences, seeing people at the Apollo, and those performances with my uncle and my sister of being Michael Jackson and my cousin Honeybee. Because sometimes, you know, we'd be Tony Orlando and Dawn, and they would be Dawn, of course, and I'd be Tony. Because my grandmother
not to Dawn.
Yeah.
You was not tired of yelling "Ribbon Rob the Old Oak Tree," Mr. Williams.
Yeah.
I had to picture that. Oh my goodness. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because my family has always been shaped of two sides. The one side of my family is are Christians, highly religious people, good people, and the other side of my family are like just project to the core, like street. And that is the makeup of a lot of our families, white and black.
That's true. That's true. Well, you know, that's a cultural thing with us, you know. That there is cultural. Either you're going to be in church or the church is going to run you to do what you want to do, you know. And, And then you up in the Bronx, and see, I'm from Detroit, so, you know, we almost quoting the same shit. Because, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then
but
you going over to Harlem.
Yeah, and that was my home beginning. Once I got about 16 years old, truthfully, I got out in the world a little bit, and I was, you know, my past. I was in Harlem and in Queens and in Brooklyn and spreading my wings and not really making the best decisions, but I always held in my heart that song and that it was something that I wanted to do. So fortunately, from some of the wrong decisions I was making and being out in the world and in the street, I was at least smart enough to take some of my money, and I've gone to my dad and said, listen, I got this, I need this. So we put our money together and I made my first demo. I put about 8 or 9 songs together, worked with Timmy Allen, who worked with R. Kelly, worked with Amir Bayan, who had done some stuff for Kool & the Gang. And then I did a couple of things on my own in camp. And I was fortunate enough, I was in a club one night. Madonna was in Danceteria. And I was in a club one night, and I was, at the time, I was dating an actress, my son's mom, and I had a lot of our friends around in queue. So there was this white kid at the bar, and he was like, you know, I was kind of doing my little thing at the bar or whatever. And he was like, you know, who are you? I was like, you know, who are you?
So we
started talking, and one thing led to another. Found out he was Michael Rosenblatt from Geffen Records, and he had been one of the people responsible for signing Madonna, and he was kind of just hanging out with her entourage. We were at this club, Danceteria, which is a real popular spot back in, you know, my day. And it was actually, I mean, that and the garage and, like, the Cat Club and a couple other places like that, those are, like, really the it places in downtown New York to be, where you get, you know, you get the whole culture of New York. There'd be, you know, you have the gay community, you have the dreads, you have the rude boys, you have the white people, you just have a melting pot of people who are there to hear some good music and party. And I wound up meeting this kid, Michael Rosenblatt, at Danceteria, and I thought he was really BSing. He gave me his card, and I went to the office, and he introduced me to Vaughn Thomas and Cheryl Tyrell, who at the time was the black department of Geffen Records. And he said, I love him. He said, he had already told him. He said, I love this guy. Like, we had conversated and stuff like that. And to keep it real, we had a couple of commonalities of things that we liked in life, and that's really brought us. We brought us together. So the next thing I knew, a month later, he flew me out to California. I was sitting in front of Vaughn Thomas and Cheryl Tyrell, who were the black department at Geffen in 1989. And I got a deal, and a year later, I had a record out called I Talk to Myself and Promises. And that's how I started really rolling. And then a few years later, I started auditioning for stuff, and I landed New Jack City. And
All right. Now let's get into, you know, that's the fluffy stuff of it. You know, this is how it did, and this is how we did, and blah, blah, blah. But now let's get into the lessons that were learned. Because just as you said, your family is, you know, we have Christian, have Hellion. Okay. So, when you were inoculated into the business, what were those first lessons that you had to learn where you said, okay, you know what? Wow, this is a bit overwhelming.
One of the first lessons was just learning from me, again, coming from the Bronx and the kind of on both sides of the fence, the way I was raised, and my family side, my dad being very private and closed, and, you know, we keep our business in the house and, you know, stuff like that, and we don't ask people for help. We work hard. And me being a creative person, it was like he was always like, you're going to go to the Air Force, you're going to have a good career, you're going to work a good job, and there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, it was like, it's going to be baseball or music. So we kind of clashed because I was creative and spontaneous, and he was like, you do things slow moving and slow building and keep on a steady course. So one of the lessons that I had to really learn, which thankfully for my father, was not to stop taking things in. It's like, this will never stop coming like this, meaning the money, the accolades, the vanity. And I had to quickly learn that because, and I was thankful to learn that through somebody else. Like, there's some lessons you learn from yourself. You know, like for me, betrayal was a lesson I had to learn in music business. Coming from the Bronx and being like, you know, me and my friends were pretty stern young men. And, you know, it's just a certain way that you carry yourself, and that was never dishonored. And if it was going to be addressed in a certain way. And in the music business, it was just weird to see how parasitical or just and honestly, I think we all know this, who do this. It's hard to find a lot of times real people who are really just people who mean what they say and say what they mean. And that was a lesson I had to learn on my own, because I started befriending people who were only befriending me because of who I was becoming and not because of who I was. And at the first sign of adversity, they literally didn't know me. And that was a hard pill to swallow at first, but that was definitely one of the first two lessons I learned when I was inoculated into the music business.
Wow. Okay, you know, what is your mindset? Because I know someone like me, I'm a very giving person. I love people, and I am a very optimistic person. I'd like to believe that there's good in everyone. However, though there's good in everyone, honey, a lot of folks choose to let that damn hellion, you know, be the dominant factor. So when you were coming across all of that, how did you readjust your thinking to say, let me get this together?
Well, unfortunately, for some of the companies, and I mean, this is like sort of a history thing. It's a little bit negative, not something we harp on or proud of. But when I was in my 20s and I was in the music business, when that would happen, it would be a hellish reaction for me. I was very, you know, again, I come from the Bronx. We used to box a lot. And, you know, I would literally just lay hands on somebody or just, you know, get mad. And, you know, same thing with my changes there. But, again, that's not the way to deal in life, one, and for two. You know, but I was young, and I was very untrusting of people, and I wasn't really being – and I wasn't led by the right stuff then. And I really didn't know the gifting that was, on my life too at that time. And like you said, we all fall short of what we're really supposed to be doing in life. But it's a matter of trying to work and try to do the best you can at all times to do the right thing. We're not going to always do it because we all have different things that we fall short in, all of us. And it took me to get to 30 years old before I really started learning those lessons and saying, you know what, I could be this way, but I don't want to be. And there's nothing, you know, like I see some of the young dudes now, they're so anxious, like, yo, I'm hood, I'm this, I'm that. There's a lot that goes along with that. And a lot of times when they've not faced it yet and those trials start hitting them, they start wishing and regretting that they didn't posture their lives like that. That bullet hits you. That addiction hits you, that 15, 10, 7, 8, 20-year jail sentence hits you, things become a little bit more realistic than just being immature and hanging out and doing stupid shit, to be honest. Now, I wasn't one of those kids. Truthfully, I was a very calculating young, you know, I was trying to hustle and get it the fast way, even in music. And thankfully, I met some cool people who I started learning the business from. And even though my career, I was always like the second or third or fourth option on every record company that I was signed to. So that was always an obstacle with Christopher Williams really blossoming into who I thought he could have. But it got to this point to realize I wasn't supposed to blossom then because it's time for me to do it now.
Dig that. Ooh, Chris. Wow, now right there, because we hear that a lot from folks who say they've been signed to these labels, they've been put on the shelves. You know, the labels are really not doing a lot with them. They're not developing them. They're not, you know, they got little studio time to work on their own stuff. They got you in the studio working on everybody else's stuff. You know, and a lot, that lesson there is what folks tend not to get right away, or at least open their eyes to see, okay, maybe this is not my time to blossom right now. You still got that germination period. And I like that you said that. That's a jewel right there. Now, here's something that go ahead.
And thankfully, because of people thinking enough of me to like my music or like me, this still, through the play community and through just, you know, just still being cool with, like, Faith and the night I met you, coming to see Faith and Fantasia, I still have a lot of really cool relationships. So I really feel like the fermentation or the, you know, this time period that it was supposed to be like that in a sense. And, you know, I even go to the point of looking and seeing, like, my friend Gerald Levert dying in the void for stand-up, flat-footed, real singers who are just men, who are simple, cool men who just love the entertainment aspect of putting on a real show without having to call you a bitch or a hoe and da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, again, I'm not judging anybody because I got my own thing. I'm just saying that's not the way I do it, and I think there's a void for it. And, you know, I'm proud to see Elder Barge coming out and stuff like that. But, you know, I think that it's really a thing where people are just like, wow, a breath of real musical air. Whether you like the song or love the song or don't like the song, I think when you witness Elder Barge on stage during one of those performances up against some of the things that the record companies are more backing and pushing, you're going, okay, how does his voice sound better than that, even though that song might be getting played 500 times more on the radio? Because it just starts to introduce this new, younger audience to be courageous enough to take the talent in them and be innovative and really be musical, like really sing. You don't have to do what the last person did. Just like I like Janelle Monae, I think that's her name, a new artist.
Love her.
Is that she's courageous enough to say, this is what I do. I'm not dissing what Dee does or what Rihanna does or what Sierra does or what this person does, but she's like, that's just not me.
Right.
This is what I do. And that's what makes music great to me, when it's real, from a real place. It's not manufactured like a Big Mac in some record company saying, okay, well, she had a big butt. She put on the Azadeen Aaliyah short dress, and she worked out with this person. She got tracks from this person, so you're going to do the same thing. And we're going to make a carbon copy of what is already going on right now, and the same for God. You're doing all that unnecessary dancing and shit, so the next dude is going to do all this unnecessary stuff.
Exactly, as if that's the blueprint of what this is supposed to be, right?
Dissing, and I'm not dissing the few individuals like my boy Usher, who that's really who he is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that every young dude don't have to come out and try to be Michael Jackson, Usher, this, that format of type of entertainer. It starts to look like everybody's trying to cop that thing.
Yeah, there's no originality. Yeah, and the industry itself pushes that. Once someone comes and break the mold.
Yeah, and you know, so funny.
You know,
it's funny, like when Jill Scott, not to cut you off, me came out with her first.
No, go ahead.
I think it was like, wow, a breath of real musical air. And it's a big, pretty chick.
Mm-hmm.
She ain't showing no skin, and she's just singing these phenomenal songs and gets on stage and really sings them.
And wears us out.
Wears them out. They're like, this is really different.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, in understanding that, because one of the things that I love about you is that you give the man Those of us who are not tenors and first tenors and screaming tenors and first tenor, second alto type voices, you really have done a lot to help shape the baritone bass vocal in R&B music. Okay, that is what is my beauty, because after puberty hit and I lost all of my natural tenor and everything and became this baritone bass, I did not know how to appreciate it. But because you're my contemporary, see, we had Teddy P. And Teddy P came up there, and you know, he's known as the growler and this, that, and the other. But you were my contemporary, you and Johnny Gill. And so y'all helped to shape and give the baritone bass man a sound and know that it was appreciative, that we can do, you know, we have riffs, we have holding, we know a whole note from a half note, you know, this, that, and the other. And I appreciate you for that. But at the same time, with that, I just compared it to Teddy Pendergrass and to Johnny Gill. How was that for you, maintaining your originality in this business? Because, like I said, there's Teddy P, there's you, even Colonel Abrams, house diva, house music diva, Colonel Abrams. Y'all kind of sound alike. You know, how was that for you? Because he was doing dance music, and, you know, was there any pressure to get you to do dance music because he was hot on the scene? What was that like for you to maintain your originality?
I mean, I just got the pleasure of watching Colonel Abrams because he was, like, before me. But definitely when I came out, I think it goes back to what we were just saying. For every individual, I think, like, it's like anything else. It's like everybody, okay, we'll take something else everybody does. And I could take two, let's take sex, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Down to the bone, sex is intimacy between two or more people, period.
Right.
And there's a technique, there is a basic technique to it. But
right.
What makes it better or not are the other variable factors that are pure, like the essence of a person, the way a person smells, and the way a person can take what they feel intimately and really express it. And I think that's the difference between uniqueness. Like, there's certain things where you can say, well, Johnny could have done that song, or Gerald could have done that same song, or Chris could have done that same song, or maybe even Jaheim or Joe could have done that same song. But the difference is, what makes you unique is how you really tell the story and how you feel it in your heart. And that's got to be different for each individual. And I think that's what makes a person try to stay. I mean, you can't help if you listen to Stevie Wonder. I mean, you can tell that certain people have listened to certain people. But when you outright want to go out and wear the same outfits, use the same type of theme in photography and go to that extent, I just don't prefer to do that. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, if you want to plagiarize what someone's look was, what how their stage was, but my thing is you can do that from a pure point and still create a great show, still get, you know, points of emphasis that are like highs and lows for the show, and just be unique in what you do. So this way, I mean, no one can ever say you are just like somebody else. And whoever is for you and is really your fan, they tend to stay with you through a period of time because they really just like you for the pure way that you are. So you're not trying to, you know, circumvent and invent yourself too far. And, you know, in time, everyone changes and implements, clothes change, fashion change, but the pureness inside of you doesn't change. And I think that's why people love Charlie Wilson. That's why they stay with Charlie Wilson, because Charlie has said, "Shabba-dabba dwing dwing dwing" on almost every record he's done. But he does it different and in a different spot because he's singing from a real and pure place. And it's some place that Charlie feels that's just for Charlie.
Dig that. Now I'm going to go here. And after I go
and
here.
I want to say that I'm proud of R. Kelly because I watched his performance on the Soul Train Awards the other night. And I really thought that R, despite all that he's gone through, he really stepped up and showed that the true gifting is in him. despite being imperfect like everybody else, the people that judge him, whatever, but he really has the ability to go out there and sing and entertain and write and produce. And it was just good to see him do an award show, which he didn't do before, and show that, the you know, the 38 to 43, 45-year-olds can still hold the attention of a 20-year-old. It just has to be real. You have to be able to really do it.
Exactly. Okay. Now, let me go here, because this is something that's very sensitive to my heart. Very sensitive to my heart. And that is, your first album, As Angels in Paradise, was produced by my diva, Miss Stephanie Mills.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like for you, working with her, touring with her, you know, becoming friends with her? What is that for you? I've got to hear this from your lips.
You know what's funny? It was an adventure in paradise.
Wow.
I'll never forget the first day I met Stephanie. And, you know, I'm not, and again, you've met me. I'm a real laid-back person. I don't like, I can firmly say I'm not arrogant. I'm just a regular, you know, even-keeled person.
Dig it.
I remember going to Nelson George's book party at Stephanie Mills' house, and I wasn't even signed to her situation at that time, managerial-wise. We were all, so we went up Mount Olympus. I'm in California, and I just moved out there. So I'm driving up Mount Olympus, and I'm seeing them in the ballet guys in front of her house. They got the little spotlight out there and everything, and I'm like, wow, this is kind of fly.
Okay.
Literally, I ring the doorbell, and don't expect that Stephanie's going to answer the door, and she answers the door. And she just embraced me, like, from the second that I met her. Like, I remember a couple of nights later, me, her, and a couple of colleagues that we worked with together, we all went to the movies, and we just did simple stuff and had a lot of fun, stuff like to laugh. The one thing about Stephanie that I appreciate more than any of that, though, is that Stephanie and Frankie Beverly and Uncle Charlie were really three people I got to watch from a bird's eye view, because a lot of Charlie's nephews and his brother Robert, God bless the dead, played on a lot of my music and co-wrote and co-produced and did backgrounds and just had a close assimilation. So I was fortunate enough to see what it took to be that great on stage by Stephanie Mills, by Frankie Beverly, by Charlie Wilson. So I saw what it took to go into it, and she immediately put me into that kind of boot camp, because she was like, if you're going to tour with me and open with me, and I think I did a pretty good job, because even the first performance we ever had, I was never supposed to do that with her in the Image Awards. She was gracious enough, I think it was 1990 Image Awards, Stephanie was gracious enough to say, I want Christopher Williams in this slot with me. They didn't know who I was. I mean, a few people might have known. You mean that new guy who looks like I'll Be Sure with the Bobby Brown sounding record, I Talk to Myself? But she was like, no, I'm going to show you who the real Christopher Williams is, because we're doing the remake that me and Teddy did. And it was like, what? Yeah. Like,
right.
Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah, I was jealous.
She was like, no. Either that or I'm not doing the awards. So she was that gracious enough to do that. And I don't know if it had even went that far, but she was like, you're doing that awards with me. And I was like, I mean, and even I remember the late Lou Silas saying, because I was, like, nervous, and he was like, you better go out there and slap Stephanie on her ass. You better let her know who the man is. I was like, I can't do that to Stephanie. He's like, shit. He's like, you do it to everybody else. Just treat her like anybody else you know.
Okay.
And
you stupid.
That day, that whole night, this is a true story, Meech, from Lou just pounding me, like telling me over and over again. So we had rehearsal that night. I left rehearsal that night and instantly got sick, just from anxiety and pressure. So that next morning I called me and Stephanie's manager, and I was like, I'm sick. I can't do it. I can't. I was like, literally, come over here. Come to my house. I was like, I know my fever is at least 103, 104. I'm burning up. But sure enough, she got Stephanie on the phone, came to the house, like, Chris is really sick, and Stephanie's like, this is where you decide whether you want to be a real player or not. She was like, because the show has to go on. And I wound up doing the Image Awards with a 103 fever. I had just thrown up before I went out on stage. But Stephanie,
really, that's that explains that color.
She held me and walked me through the whole thing. And I told her, Steph, I don't have no energy. I'm not going to be able to sing it like I normally do it. Like, and people got a chance to see what that was. But when they saw the tour and we did it, they were like, it was just electric. And we would, when that drum would break down after hitting a note, and I said, Stephanie, sit on my lap. And she would shimmy over
to my lap.
That crowd, and when that happened on the Image Awards, that was impromptu. That was, I got to really give that to the excited. Because Stephanie didn't know I was going to do that. Because I wasn't in full voice and I was sick as a dog, I was like, I got to come with some shenanigans. I got to do something. So I just dropped to my knee and said, Stephanie, sit on my lap. And her being the compliment professional, she shimmied her little body over and sat on me and made her little cute face, and the audience just, and she carried the song from that point on, because I had nothing. Stephanie carried. I did one great thing during that performance, and I listened to Lul enough to say, Stephanie, and I dropped to my knee when that drum broke down and said, sit on my lap. And the crowd was like, oh, no, he didn't.
Yes, child, that is a YouTube favorite. I've downloaded it like 15 times. I have it on my iPod now. In fact,
I love Stephanie. She's one of the greatest singers I've ever met. And I just love her like my sister. And we don't see each other as much as we used to, but whenever we do, you know, it's always just really great to see her. And she still looks great. She still sounds great. And I'd really love to do something with her again. It'd be an honor.
But you know what? I'm a show teller. Because she's a friend of the show. She's been on. She came on her birthday. And, she's been gracious to befriend me. And, okay, I ain't going to get into that because, yeah, that's a dream come true. So anything that you're feeling, I understand.
Yeah, she's just a bad
because
girl. And when you're in the presence of her gift, it's like, damn. At least I am. Anyway.
Okay.
I'm like, damn. I just remember as even a teenager watching her in the Wiz, because she was so young doing it. We're actually not that far apart in age, but Stephanie was a child doing it, and I was a child dreaming of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember seeing this little girl in the Wiz going, wow, man.
Right.
And I still feel the same way after touring with her. After years of not seeing her, I caught one of her performances at the Paramount Theater in the Bronx. And I was just like, she's just a bad girl.
Okay.
She's a bad, bad girl.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, I just had to hear that for myself because, I'm old school. I like to read all the liner notes and this, that, and the other when we buy the product.
And
so
I know you like
when
history.
I saw that.
I also know that you like to delve into a lot of the history and the connections. And a lot of people don't know that Stephanie really gave Donald Lawrence not only his first, well, not his first thing, but that was definitely a significant job. Donald Lawrence was in charge of all of Stephanie's music, which partly lent to the fact of her gifting, because you bring him along with her and you get him as the band leader and her singing, and it's just incredible. So Donald was in charge of all the music. And our ex-manager wound up giving Donald Lawrence his first real record deal on Giant Records with a group called Company. And from that, he went on and got the Tri-City Singers. So Stephanie has really not only just helped, she's helped a lot of people. She's just not a person who runs out and says, hey, you know, I open this door for you. She just does it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And not that Donald didn't crack the door open and deserve it and work to get it open, but it's always nice when you got a person to say, let me help you get that door open and let me give you a little information as to what's about to happen.
Here's the key to open that door. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Steph is a bad
chick,
and I love her.
That's my baby. Mm. We'll talk, yeah. Okay, don't get, see, Breeze, okay. Now, you mentioned Al B. Sure. Now, please clear this up for the folks.
We're not
please
cousins, but we're definitely really good friends, and we've always been supporters of one another. And I think truthfully, honestly, from both of us, I think each one of us has frustrated the other just because only so many times can somebody say, are you him or is he you? And that happens to both of us. So I think that's the only thing with me and Al. We laugh about it. It's not a negative thing, but we're really cool friends. We just did a show in Chicago about a month ago, and I'm praying for Al's mom. I hope everybody else does too. Al's mom is recovering from cancer, but I think she's pulling through strong, and our prayers have been in there for her. And Al's a trooper, man. He's people don't know a lot about Al B. Sure. He's a really acute businessman. You know, I mean, he's had hit records and stuff like that, but he's a really, I've always found Al to be, and Al, I think, is a year younger than me, if I'm correct. I think he is, because I know him and Bobby are, I think, a year or two younger than me. But I've learned a lot of business stuff from Al, be sure. He's always like, whenever we do shows, and tell, he's always like somebody who's on top of every I and T. And I love Al. I mean, you know, we have two different styles, how we approach things, but we support one another, you know, 100%.
Okay. All
but
right, well, then that clears that up, baby, because that has just been the long running thing. And how come this, and if they cousins, how come they, you know, they don't do no work together, they ain't recorded together, you know how the folk get. Now, let me take this time right here. I want to introduce the folks to this particular track, and I know you're working on a new project right now, and I have got to let these kids hit another one I wanted to play. I can't get. It won't download for me. But I got this one to do, and this one here, this is called The Way You See It.
I can't stop thinking about, no matter how hard that I try, I'm always trying to hide the way I feel, baby. See, I don't need to talk about what's on my mind. I might lie, you can see it in my eyes. Baby, you're losing me. I never meant to hurt you.
I can see it in your face.
Hey, I can see the sadness in your face. If I could turn back the hands of time.
Uh-oh.
No matter how hard that I try, I'm always trying to hide the way I feel, baby. See, I don't need to talk about what's on my mind. I might lie, you can see it in my eyes. Baby, you're losing me. I never meant to hurt you.
I can see it in your face.
Hey, I can see the sadness in your face. If I could turn back the hands of time, let me change my mind. Thinking to myself, I'm falling out of love.
Left out hiding the way that we feel.
Baby, left out
hiding the way that we feel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The way. Trying to find the way I feel, baby. And I don't need to say lies. It's on my mind, I might lie. You can see it in my eyes.
Baby, you're losing me.
I never meant to hurt you.
I can see it in your face.
Hey, I can see the sadness in your face. If I could turn back the hands of time. Change my mind, thinking to myself, I'm falling out.
babies. All right. That there is the way that we feel. Now, listen. Y'all know these cell phones are just a mess right now. He's about to call back in because he ended up dropping his signal. But while we're waiting for him to call back in, I got another song here that's coming from the new project. I'm going to play it right now. This one is called Monster. Wait a minute. Let me make sure I got all of my sounds and stuff right because, okay, check this out.
Punching in at 7, clocking out at 5, working two jobs, provides a final place in life. Whipping the garage, kept headed on the charge, and the cues and the cars in the whole 9 yards. You had a plan, it was done in the dark. We need the laughs and started the bar. And now my head is buzzing, I was in love, but you was it put a hole inside of my heart. That's all that. Pat yourself on the back. So because of you, I'm through with love. Better love my camera. Now it's the turn of the man. I don't get no twins about the passion. Not the man I choose to be. Hope you're proud. Girl, so girl, you made me a monster, I believe it.
Wait a minute. That Everybody who now, okay, wait. Oh, music does that to me, but it tickles me. Okay, tell us about this new project that you're working on, and when we going to be able to put all this in everybody's iPods and this, that, and the third, honey, because this has got to go in mine.
The new single and the new video are coming the second week of March with this Life. I'm doing a Life After show with TV1, and it's kind of just doing a brief down the journey thing, and it's bringing us up to speed on what I'm about to do with the new CD and stuff, and it's going to be like a weekly, you know, for a week they'll show, and it's going to premiere the new single and the new video. The single's going to have already leaked by February, but the new video, and it'll start to really hopefully be pumping by March, and then I think the release of the whole CD is going to be around May or June, right after Mother's Day, between Mother's Day and Father's Day.
All righty then.
But you'll have
to go Life After you, hun. Okay, cute.
Yeah.
Life after New Jack City.
Yeah, Life After New Jack City.
Wow. These last two songs, honey, this is the feel of the album. Okay. And you, with these two songs, too, since you're giving men a voice, you know what I'm saying? We've just been inoculated with For Color Girls, and that's a fantabulous movie. But I think that we're also moving into an era where men are more stepping up to the plate. They're showing a more emotional side to them that's not wussed, but, you know, they're able to deal with their emotions and carrying on. And this song right here, Monster, just explains that whole mentality that we get, you know, when we've been hurt and this, that, and the other. I don't want to take no shit no more. You know, you just made a monster out of me, you know.
Yeah. And I've allowed you to, but so what? You did, you helped.
You know. Wow. When I first heard this, I said, okay, I've got to find this link, and I had it once before because when you were doing, I think you had just finished this in the studio and everything, and I had gotten a blast from you about it, and I said, okay, cute, and I can't find it in my computer nowhere, and I was frantic, but I'm glad that you sent your EPK because it was on there. So,
I'll send you the MP3 of the particular monster one.
Yes, because that's going in my pod, honey. That's going in my pod. I got to let the kids know what this is all about.
And truthfully,
let me go here.
That you have, those are the starters. That's like the bar, and everything else that we've been trying to do is like got to outdo these.
Did you know what? See, that is what makes a decent album and a decent project, and you just don't settle for any kind of material. I've not been in the studio as a recording artist yet. I do write a little bit. But when I listen to music, I just hear what I know the masses were like. This here is going to be one of the new anthems that men are going to gravitate to. I just feel that in my spirit, excuse me. So I can't wait for this project to drop. And you said the first in March is my birthday, so I celebrate all month long. So yeah, that'll be a cute birthday gift for me, Chris. So thank you.
I will gladly share it with you.
Okay, now let me
and
go
I'm
here.
I'm glad you talked about Color Girls real quick, because I thought that was really incredible too. And just proud of Tyler and what he's doing. And praying that he uses me in his next film, it's a possibility. So hopefully he will. Hopefully the big chief will decide to use the other lights.
Well, then, you know what? We're going to claim that to be done.
Yeah,
we're just going to stand on that to be done.
Just proud of him, what he's turned, what people call the Chitlin Circuit, and he's like just the man in Hollywood, and it's just good to see.
Well, you know,
because that's what we do as a people. We take chitlins or we take nothing or we take dirt and we keep stroking until there's a diamond under it. That's what we do. We take
exactly.
Chitlins. It's chitlins at first, and then it's a $100 sit down meal when we get through with the trip.
Okay, right. Okay, now. Now, you know, let's talk about that for a minute, because a lot of skepticism goes into a lot of the plays, you know, and I'm one of them, because as an actor, my whole thing is the content. I get sick of seeing the same message in a lot of them. You know, I've done a few myself, but when that same message, and it starts to become predictable for me, is where I fault the writers and this, that, and other.
That's the problem. I mean, it's no different than hearing 7 different records that you may even like the beat to, but you're not sure who's really singing the record because the style, the melody, everything is almost the same across the board, and there's no different plays. I definitely was leery of that when I first done it. I can honestly say, unfortunately, I've probably done 1 or 2 of those. But I've been lucky, like this last play we did, The Cleanup Woman, it wasn't per se a gospel show. It had a positive
sound.
It was a dramedy, and it just, from 8 to 80, you'd laugh. And we were fortunate enough to stay out for 2 years as a result of doing it, even in this economy. But I do share the same feeling you have about that. I mean, when you go there and the mics don't work and the lights aren't working and everything is, you know, solved by, oh, Lord, we're going to pray about it. It's not realistic.
Okay.
And I'm
right.
not at all saying that
right.
gospel, some of the inspirational shows aren't also really good. But if they are predictable, there's not content, there's not a story, and the way you use the ministry in the play has to be clever like in any other well-written piece.
Mm-hmm.
And when
mm-hmm.
you don't
exactly.
that, someone who really loves entertainment is going to be like, okay, this wasn't it. And after you go to 3 or 4 of those, you may start saying, so you really have to be selective as to which ones you do go to. I think David Talbert does really well. I think I even think Jacarius Johnson and Gary Guidry do really well. And they seem to bring
mm-hmm.
Hollywood to their shows by being able to put, you know, from young to classic artists as Richard Roundtree, and they get Morris Chestnut and different people like that.
Right,
and
Billy Dee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it what plays are an incredible, especially musicals, done right, dancing, acting, comedy, singing, done right, a play can be like one of the most incredible 3-hour journeys that a person can go on when it's done right.
Mm-hmm.
When
mm-hmm.
it's done
exactly.
Right. And as black people, even if you don't love a Tyler Perry play, you got to appreciate that he has taken the ceiling and removed it. So now it's about, if you want to implement your lane, and it's about us writing great stories and getting, whether known or not known, wonderfully gifted, talented people to portray these characters and make these things come to life. I mean, it's in most of our shows, the music, you know, is most of the time a given because we sing, you know, but
exactly.
You also, when you pay to see a play, like you're saying, you want to see a play. You want to see people who are really acting, not just on stage because they made a record or because they told
exactly.
a joke or because they're a radio person.
Exactly.
Or because they're
and we know you only here to sing this song.
Right.
Okay. Okay, I'll make you sit right here because you're going
to
sing this song.
I have to give Jack A. Harry and Thelma Hopkins a lot of credit and George Wilburn because in this last play we did, they really brought it like every night in a real way. Like they just did, and people would laugh. They would laugh. George Wilburn and Jack A. Harry, I mean, they would just have
oh, wow.
on the floor. And Jack A. don't even try.
Jack A., that's my baby.
She's just... She is popping, and Thelma, you know, she brings that classic actress who's just done a wealth of stuff, and it really works, so we had a good time. And I've done a couple other plays that were really good. Me and Clifton Powell did a play called Man of the Dreams that worked out really good. Jack A. was in that also. But
I had Clifton on the show last week. Okay.
Yeah. Every once in a while, you do one, and you stay out for about 2-3 years, and you're like, wow, this is a good one. You know, but unfortunately, there are ones that are, you know, oh, Lord, and da-da-da, you know. I did a show called, I did a show with Shantae Moore, Tashina Arnold, and Kenny Lattimore, and Dottie Peoples and Lenny Williams called What Men Don't Tell, written by Latarius Whitfield, a writer out of Dallas who really admires August Wilson a lot. And it was a really great show. That was another one that I did that was like, wow, this is. And when the end of the night, you don't even have to say did you enjoy it. People were just up like this was it. And we were fortunate enough to experience that with the cleanup woman. People really liked it. J.D. Lawrence did a really good job. And he has some really cool people in the show with him. And it just worked.
Jigged up.
The unknown people and the known people. Because, I mean, even the girl who played my wife, Trisha Mann, an actress from Los Angeles, she was that girl. She was that anchor woman. Like, you believe she was, you know, Sue Simmons from Eyewitness News Channel 7.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She was really good.
Now, let me go here with you because there, and you've spoken about this on a couple of occasions, but there was a little ugliness with you. And it's very sensitive. So if you choose to go here, it's fine. If not, I do understand because it is a part of the past, but a lot of people still want to link domestic violence and your name because of whatever the ugliness was.
Well, unfortunately, for a long time, people were under the myth and the misperception that I had broken Halle Berry's eardrum. But that, again, I've said over and over again, is unfortunately not the truth. Now, again, I in the past had been the type who was like, I don't want to say the business. I would always say you guys should ask Halle and she'll tell you the truth. But the truth is it did, you know, it came out on E-Television or whatever. It was the bottom line is I did not break Halle Berry's. There's no domestic violence issues with me. My girl would tell you that right now. People who really truly know me know that. And that's why I don't really defend it. It's not that big of an issue with me. But the person who broke Halle Berry's ear is Wesley Snipes. She said it. E-Television said it. You know, unfortunately, I didn't used to like to say it, but it is what it is. I love Wes as a person. I guess whatever relationship they had went on before me and her relationship, there was a Valentine's Day incident, and she got hit in the ear by him, and that is really the end of it. That's really what happened in the past. I did not do it. She would tell you I did not do it. And, you know, my mama would tell you, my sister would tell you.
Okay.
But, again, it's not that big of an issue where it's so deep or hard for me to address. I mean, it's definitely a nasty thing to have attached to your name. I'm not built like that. I don't do that. People really know me, know that. Now, don't get me wrong. But one or two occasions in my life with an ex-girlfriend, I've had some pretty verbal incidences and maybe even a grab, but never a hit. And a grab's not even right. But, again, that was in my 20s, and I'm man enough to admit that. And people who want to look at me with plank in my eye, hey, I've not done everything right in my life. But domestic violence does not follow my life. It's not my way of life. I have really great relationships, actually.
Okay. Speaking of great relationships.
I'm glad you did bring it up because, unfortunately, it's something that when I don't control the media, if five or six media tags say, hey, Christopher Williams allegedly broke Halle Berry's ear and this, and that, you know, again, I never just wanted to be like a point of emphasis to defend, but, you know, it like I'm saying, it is what it is. If you ask her, I'm sure Wesley wouldn't be happy about being asked, but he's going through enough stuff right now. Like I said, I do love Wes. I went to college with Wes. Our relationship probably got a little strained because I didn't even know they were having a serious relationship. But when me and Halle met, it was kind of like just, you know, we just went to each other and got in time for about a year and a half. And I think Hallie's a great girl. She knows I think she's a great girl. She was at a juncture in her life where I was having a lot of issues with Uptown and my career. and she was getting ready to take flight from Jungle Fever and some of the things she did, and we just, you know, our friendship or respect for each other, I don't think, went away, but we just didn't have a relationship anymore. And there was no bad feelings, no domestic violence. I mean, Howdy would definitely tell you, Christopher is definitely a soldier. He may not always act like it or appear to be, but Christopher is definitely a soldier. But hit me, nah, that never went down.
Okay, well, dig that. Dig that. That's very honorable. Now, let me go. Well, first off, let me say this to everybody listening by computer. We're down to the last 2 minutes, but I got a couple more questions. So we're going to keep going, and you can catch everything in the archive. They'll be downloadable once we finish everything. So you're able to catch everything there. So I thank you all for tuning in. And you got 1 minute to call in if you want to continue to listen live by telephone, 347-205-9183. So we're going to keep going because I want to go here. And that is, you are known for your attractiveness. That's what your draw is to everybody, straight, gay, alike. How is it for you to be the sex symbol or to be the eye candy, to be, you know, the dream that everyone wants to hold up to? You know, everybody got you in that category with you, Shamar, Billy D, Morris, you know, just these fine brothers, honey, that everybody wanted to get their hands on.
I mean, it makes me laugh, kind of, because I'm me, so I know, like, all my flaws and stuff, and but, you know, I'm humble, and it's flattering. I mean, I definitely don't not like it. I'm not going to sit here and lie and act like, oh, you know, I don't really. I think anyone likes when someone appreciates whatever it is, and I think even when I comment about my music, I say most of the time whether you like my music or you like me, because that has been, you know, part of my career, but I really truly just love people, and I'm glad they like me and what I'm trying to do, and I'm just looking forward to the second phase of my career. And I like it. If I can be, you know, if I can remain a sex symbol going through my 40s and 50s and 60s and become, you know, half of what Billy D is or who Christopher Williams is supposed to be, that would be blessed. That'd be amazing, and I'm looking forward to it, and I embrace it.
Okay.
So I like it.
All right.
I like it.
Okay. What you say? Bottom line is, yes, I like it. Okay.
But I mean, truthfully, the best part about a person, all of our looks fleet. You know, as we get older, if we keep breathing. But they fleet and they change. It may not even be for the better, for worse, but we all get older. But it's good to be beautiful to people. Like, that's the best part of what I like about that. Somebody might, like, be attracted to me, but it's funny, I meet people after the stage, and they're like, I really just like your spirit. And that's, like,
mm-hmm.
like people are like, you know, you're a cool person. You know, I know you sing, or you may act, or you're on the radio, or you got a TV show, but it's important to still remain being just a cool person and realize that you're not the gift. You've just been, just the gift giver has chose to give each of us all gifts. And if you can make a living for yourself doing that and affect people and be able to party with people at your shows and during the production of plays and assume that professional family thing when you're on a radio show together or a TV show together, those are great experiences and all the memories that you always, you know, treasure. Just like when you brought up Stephanie, I can think of so many different moments and nights and things that happened during that whole adventure in paradise.
Mhm. Wow. Okay. See, I tell you that just I just get shudders and sweatbaths. Oh, that's sickening. I love it. Now, let's talk about this real briefly. Christopher, the father. You know, what is it, and how is it that you, as a black man here in this country, dealing with your children? You know, what is that like for you? And if you were to tell us about you from the eyes of your children, what would they say about their dad?
I think they would say that my father is determined. That my father's strong, my father's cool. My dad is smart, he's spiritual. And then I love my dad.
All right. Any of your children looking to follow in Pop's footsteps?
My son Christopher, my oldest. My son Christopher, like I said, is one of the things. He's also in the studio right now, but he is also seen. He's related. His family is also in the music business from another end. Damon Dash. You know, people like that. So he has seen what the music business is from the business standpoint. And my son, fortunately, has had a life where his mom, her husband, his granddad, his grandmother, grandfather, and my son, everyone has sort of sown into his life. So he's not, fortunately, doesn't have the pressure of having to do it. So he wants to do it his way, independently. And right now, while he was in school, he was just enjoying until he was 21, 22 years old, of just his, you know, his school life and just being a regular kid. And now that he's out of school, he is becoming really anxious to do it. He went and interned with Damon on a project he was doing. So he's getting his feet wet as far as the what he's going to need to do. He can flat out sing, but what we're getting him to do is learn the engineering part, learning how to really make his music go without having to really lean in too many different places, which is the experience I had to do, because I had to learn by connect the dots. 1989, okay, I had to learn, and then I had to go through all the phases of my journey to learn about publishing, marketing, B-side control, what the license of the record gives you, the ownership, the not ownership. By the time you get through these deals where you got a 15, 16-point deal at a three-quarter rate, and you got to pay the producer 3 or 4%, by the time you get a check off a $10 million record sold, you're talking about $150,000,
$200,000.
Ask Tony Braxton.
Right. Hello.
Ask me. And again, people, and with me, I think people don't realize the most I've ever had is a gold record. I've never gone platinum, but New Jack City was a big part of my career. And I think, fortunately, just the whatever intimate encounters that happen at concerts or shows that I've done, people who like Christopher or what Christopher does musically, they kind of ride with me, and I'm just thankful for them. So I'm anxious to see what this whole ride with me, my son Christopher, and this, like I said, this is the next chapter, and we're hoping to one day at least be able to do the same thing that Eddie and Gerald did and have a father and son tour one day, Julio and Enrique. We might do it a little more like Julio and Enrique.
Okay, right.
Julio sold 100 million records. I'm not mad at Julio.
Okay, no, not at all.
Enrique's not far behind him, so I'm not mad at him.
See? Okay, that just done me some good. All right. Now, with all of this wonderful spirit of yours, and you have made it a point to let the folks know that I'm a very spiritual person, I'm very humble, I'm just a regular guy. You know, this just happened to be my job. I'm a singer, and, you know, I'm an entertainer. This happened to be the job that I have. Can we look forward to some kind of inspirational gospel CD or something coming from you in the future? Or is the music that you do, the passion that you put in, that speaks to the spirit of the man we know as Christopher Williams?
Yeah, I think I'll continue to...
Uh-oh, we dropped his signal. Hold on. You know, hit some area. and we've got to call him right back. All right, hold on. Let me play this so I can get him back on the line.
Oh, baby.
becomes a man. When a fool becomes a man, that's just a sick thing. That is just a sick thing. Oh, my goodness. Now, we were talking about you. Oh, goodness. And the spirit, you know, of your music. Yeah, and I was asking, are we going to look for a gospel CD or inspirational CD from you in the future, or is, you know, the music that you do now, is it reminiscent of your passion and your spirit for life and for your love for the Creator and all of that?
I definitely am not limited to not doing that one day, but initially for now, I'm gonna continue to do. I mean, I definitely would love to release some inspirational songs with different artists like Stan Jones or Brian Courtney Wilson or Fred or Marvin or, you know, any one of those people would be an honor. But or just maybe simply, I've actually recorded a couple of songs, but I've not thought about releasing them yet. But right now, I'm just focused on this Christopher Williams next project and TV and movies and this next phase. And I think at some point, you know, for sure, one day when I'm where I'm supposed to be, I'll tell people, look what God could do. And I'm probably going to wind up making a couple of inspirational CDs. But even the way I feel gospel music is definitely, I don't know if people know about Brian Courtney Wilson, but it's definitely still along the line. I still love the music to be, you know, I probably wouldn't be the most effective, you know, standard, you know, gospel singer, but music like that and, you know, definitely kind of stuff like Marvin and Fred do.
Dig that.
And I could definitely see myself definitely doing something like that. I have the honor of working with one of those fellas.
Well, all right. Y'all heard it here. Oh, Chris, this has been a pleasure for me. And finally, you are officially off of my shit list.
And I didn't even deserve to be on there.
No, see, and that there, see, you, okay, that's a whole nother show. We ain't going to talk about shade. You know. But as we close, is there anything else that you want the folks to know, any kind of contacts where they can get a hold of you? What? You know, put it out there.
I will be making a major e-blast of my whole web setup and everything. I don't have anything specific yet to put out there, but just encourage you to keep listening to my man Meech and stay tuned as to what is getting ready to happen, Christopher Williams. Watch the TV One stuff in February, March, and April. I'm going to be on Black in the Day, Life After, and Unsung. And they're probably going to do something on Centric about the new CD, too. So keep your eyes open, ears open. I'm definitely going to keep Meech on board with everything first, and you'll be getting it. And when I get all the web stuff set up, I'm going to blast it out. Be doing a major blast. Plus, I'll be hitting Meech up, so we'll be linked up. So I'll be linked to y'all. So just hope you like the new music and hope everybody's just blessed this holiday and just be safe out there.
Well, there you have it. Christopher Williams, it has been my ultimate pleasure. And I'm going to put you in my friend category for real. So,
Thank you, sir. Yes.
So with that, you go back into your world, honey. You done already said you got a girl, so give your girl a kiss from me. Say hello to the children. Well, hey, you ain't got kids no more. They grow half.
Say hello to the men.
Okay. Right. The men folks. Okay. And definitely thank you for dishing tea with me. And as you said, now I'm going to hold you to that. I'm going to stay on you. And you always have a platform here. As long as God gives me breath to do this right here, anything you have that needs to go out over the airway, you can always send it right here.
Thank you, Meech. I appreciate that, and I'll be doing that. So we're getting this video and this single and the rest of the CD together, and I'll be keeping you abreast. I'm going to say, actually, I have your email now, so I'll send you the Monster joint. And like I said, those aren't even going to be the first singles, so if you want to, you know, whatever you're going to do, just do your thing with it.
Oh, well,
it's all good.
Okay.
Because because I just believe the fans that I have are grown, and it's no matter how they hear it or get it, when they know the collection of 10 or 12 great songs that we're trying to put together, preferably they will be, they're just going to be like, you know what, I got to get a copy of this.
Exactly. 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 When, you know, I'm a diehard. See, I go all the way back to day one. I have practically everything you've recorded and had to buy it a few times because I had my music collection stolen twice. So... So
wow.
With that, yeah. But with that, thank you for coming on the show. And I have nothing but wonderful, wonderful, wonderful blessings that I'm passing on. And my praise report is that in this next wave of your career, that the infinite creator and the infinite creator continues to give you everything that the Omniverse has for you to grow into the man you are becoming, so that your legacy through your children will fortify itself, and that everything that you're doing now will benefit us way beyond the time, you know, for your grandchildren's grandchildren to understand. So with that love, have a blessed day, and I will talk with you again soon. For everybody else, Chris, don't hang up because you're on this line. Hold on. Everybody else, thank you for dishing your tea with me. The crumpets have been eaten. The tea has been dished. So if you love me, tell a friend. If you hated me, tell an enemy. But just know there's one way or another this is going forward. So with that, I love you and thank you all so much. Until next time, ciao.